An interview with George J. Bodenhausen at his home at 2904 East 2nd Street, Long Beach, California. The date is June 11, 1984, and the interviewer is Ann Andrees.
I think, Mr. Bodenhausen, I'd like to begin with when you came to Long Beach, and when was that? I know that's a choosing a date again.
Well, it was the year 1934. And we came out here for a vacation. We'd just completed the hospital we'd taken out of receivership and given it back to the stockholders in Chicago, and we'd worked back there for several years on doing this type of work, and it was working from 20 to 24 hours a day out there to get the thing out of receivership, and we came out here for vacation. I wanted to come back where I had been in my very early days, and I wanted to especially find out if I could still get the same odor of Pine Avenue Pier that it had, and I found when I got out here that Pine Avenue Pier was here. So that was the reason for coming out.
Mm-hmm. So where were you born then?
I was born in Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. Dad was on the railroad. He was an engineer. He was one of those hotshot boys of that time, you know, that was the engineer at 21, so mm-hmm. he liked to hunt and fish. Mm-hmm. So made a wonderful deal where he could make enough money in 6 months out of the year on being an engineer and go hunting and fishing for the other 6 months. I only wish I had the courage that he had to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, then where did you get your education?
Well, I went back. Dad died when I was about 6 years old, 5, 6 years old, and so we went back to Illinois and the little town of Litchfield, and so I stayed with my grandmother, and then went into my education was done in Litchfield, Illinois, that is, at high school, and then I went to Chicago, and had to work, and so I went to both DePaul, Loyola, Chicago, and Northwestern.
Mm-hmm. Then what made you decide that you wanted to go into hospital administration?
Because primarily I started out in medicine, and then the doctor said that I shouldn't do that because my eyes would not permit me to do surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, a doctor did everything. He didn't have much of a specialty then.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to give that up and go into other fields. But during all this time that I was going to school, I was working in hospitals, so what you would do, you would get to even take your... I took a course in x-ray one summer, and so that I take the x-rays, I could take them at night and on weekends. And it was so nice back there to have a job in which you were fed, in which you were clothed while you were working, in which you had the laundry taken care of, and where you could work at night, so
mm-hmm.
it worked out beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
So with that experience, and then later on I came back and took more work in, as you noticed I said, I went to Northwestern for my for business there, where I got most of my business education from there.
Mm-hmm. So you were working in Chicago then, after you finished your education?
So at that time, then since I had already had this experience and I knew the doctors knew me because I had worked in all these hospitals, and then one hospital went into receivership. And so they wanted to find some man that could come in those days to operate it that had business experience and had education along that line to take these hospitals out of receivership. And mine was the only one that they could find that could do that, so I got the job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How long were you working there?
Well, let's see, that was from 1930 to 1934, mm-hmm. doing that. Three hospitals during that period of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said that you had been to Long Beach when you were younger, or visited.
Yes, that's true. But you see, Dad was on the railroad. He was an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So we had lived in Las Vegas. And this was in the early 1900s, and we used to come to Long Beach during the summertime because it got quite warm in Vegas. Mm-hmm. So that's where we came in, and we would stay at the old Julian Hotel. Yeah. So and I remember the tent setting and those things at that time. Those are very vague memories. Mm. Caught my first fish off of Pine Avenue Pier. So I remember that. So.
Well, then, how did you meet Dr. Harriman Jones and become affiliated with him?
Well, I said we came out here on vacation, and so after the first 2 weeks, I got tired of the vacation. I said I'd better go to work, because that's the longest time I've ever been out of work that I can remember. You know, it's 2 weeks. And so I went by 211 Cherry and saw the place, and I said, well, I'd kind of like to work here. So I sent Dr. Jones a resume, and he came over, and we got together, and I started to work there. And I stayed there until such and such a time. Virginia can probably tell you the date on that. How long did we stay there? When did we retire? See, dates don't mean anything. A good year. Yeah.
Well,
so all of this other this we were there at that time. We were at the time where, of course, many changes came about. We had a 50-bed hospital. It was Harriman Jones Medical Clinic and Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the highest awards that you were able to get for a hospital in California, or in the United States. And then, as time went on, where the 40 beds was not large enough to be a feasible hospital, that is, if economically and as far as patient care is concerned. We knew at that point that our facilities were not large enough to take care of all the ancillary services necessary. We realized that. So when we decided that if we couldn't do it right, we wouldn't do it at all. So Dr. Jones and the group decided to close the hospital and go into clinic operation, which we could do on those facilities there. And we transferred all of our employees that wanted to go over to community hospital. Not one of those employees lost one day that wanted to go there. Their pension programs, their vacations, and everything else were assumed by community hospital. And the 200 plus employees that we had that moved over there, I think there was at least 180 of them went to. Transferred over there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then we became a clinic, and then became the adding more and more doctors to it, and more specialties as we did it to that point.
About when was it that you became a clinic and dropped the hospital facility? I know there's another date in there. Was that in the 40s or the 50s?
Do you have that information?
I have it. I'm looking here. We live in the 60s.
Well, she can get that for us. But during that period of time, we had obtained our position in the hospital field, both in this area, in California, and in the United States. And I transfer our patients from Mayo's to Mayo's, and throughout the whole area, we were right in that spot. We were the tops.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've read about the building of the clinic in 1930, and I've interviewed Kenneth Wayne, who designed it. Young architect, really knew what he was doing.
Do you know that was his... The number on his plans is 100.
Oh.
He didn't start, want to start with 1, and I've always kidded him about it, that he had to start with 100. So he got so plans number 1. It was his first plans. And we've had a very close relationship over all these years. And you might be interested that we wouldn't change the color of the paint without his approval at any time. You know? And the same way with this place here, he designed this, my home here. It was reconstruction on it. And so everything that has to be done around here, well, then he has to have his approval, even now.
Excuse me, the hospital closed April
10, 1964.
Okay. Thank you.
Now you understand with Virginia, you can understand why I don't have to remember these dates, so why should I?
Well, I found in a copy of the hospital publication, the Herald
Estimate. Yes, that was the one I wrote there.
Well, the one thing that I saw was in Mr. Wynn's scrapbook, or Mrs. Wayne had said, and it was talking about his relationship with the hospital and all. And I had the reference there that, for example, George Fay Bodenhausen, the administrator, tried with the idea of constructing a balcony in the downstairs reception area, but when Mr. Wayne's expert opinion, the administrator detracts from rather than add to the atmosphere, the project is summarily discarded. So that sort of
I would say firmly. Oh, yes, because, he had a certain, that being his number one building, he had there was not a lot of affection for it. And some of the things that he had in there were just little. He and Doctor had spent quite a bit of time on that. See, I didn't come there. I think that was in 1930, when it was established, in August, July and August. I didn't get there till 34, and that was on November the 11th, in 1934, when I arrived on the scene.
Well, one of the things, Mr. Wayne said that, Dr. Harriman Jones used to come to his office every morning with different ideas and sketches of things that he wanted included and incorporated in the facility.
That is correct. Right. And he would have ideas, and if they didn't, I would always end up in the middle of the situation, which was always interesting. But Doctor Harriman Jones Clinic was to be built on Signal Hill, on Block X up there, and that's right at Hill, and right on the north is where you get the road that goes up the hill, and it's right on Cherry Avenue. That's that block, that full block. Unfortunately, six wells were discovered on that, and it was impossible to both put up the clinic there at that time. Well, do you remember anything about that? Were you in Long Beach during that period of time?
No.
Which, I was going to ask because Doctor had constructed a little house up there. He built up there just for himself, just for the fun of it. And it was on the corner. That was the only building that was there. Well, throughout the years then, you can understand the Depression came along. And therefore, funds were coming in from these six wells, and taxes were quite reasonable too. Okay? And it was possible to make certain investments.
Mm-hmm.
So during that period of time, we invested in monies in Mexico, the Babacanora Grande, down in Oreste down there, and had 4,000 hectares of land on that ranch and all with it. And then he did some work. Then there was some oil down in Texas, which was handled by the Kemps down there. Kemp, I think it was. And they had checkerboarded down there. So monies were coming in at that time and had to be, were being reinvested. And he invested in houses and apartments in this area. And with other investments that he had. So I got involved in this along with it. Doctor was deaf. And therefore, a lot of the things came over my desk, and then more and more as the older he became less active in business, I say. And then our office had to handle that. So it was, we were handling that along with running the hospital and the clinic and those other things.
When I read an article in the paper, it was the 1930, and when the hospital was opened, the hospital clinic was opened, and it referred to the, quoting Dr. Jones, quoting this idea of establishment of a trust fund, in which it would be a semi-public finance organization, a combination of social welfare collection agency and finance corporation, where everyone's fee would be the same, but those who perhaps were unable to meet the cost at that time could make arrangements with the trust to pay their medical bills and to the doctor and all. Was this plan put in operation?
That plan was never put into operation, but there's a lot of those ideas that were put into operation. Dr. Jones did a lot of things for lots of people, but he wanted no publicity. He didn't want the people to know about it. He would do things for the police department, where youngsters would get into trouble, where youngsters would need bikes, or they would need this, or they would need care, and nobody ever knew whatever happened, but everything was taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And he would much rather, he did a lot of that where he did not enter into, the regular non-profit giving to non-profit organizations, but he did a lot for people.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is what, this was something, was his idea. It, all of it did not come to fruition. But I don't think that we ever, I don't think we've, at no time do I ever recall that we ever turned anyone down.
Mm-hmm.
And we found the people we had where people would come back after years and take care of their bills.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any pressure was ever put on anyone that could afford it, who couldn't afford to pay it. We always made arrangements for them to pay even at a lower amount.
Mm-hmm.
And people in those days wanted to pay their bills.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was a dollar. I do recall, and I think Virginia will recover, several accounts of there was somebody was paying 25 to 50 cents. I'd go to them and I'd say, please, the bookkeeping on this costs more. And they'd say, well, no, I want to pay my bills. So we did it. So it cost us more to collect some of them than the people that wanted to. But feelings of that time in our country, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly during the 30s, the effects of the Depression, I imagine this was even more of a problem for people.
Yes, you realize that, and I think the room rates were quite reasonable. Weren't they $3 and a half a day, wasn't it? $3 and a half a day, something like that. We got that. Well, we can look that up, but I know that would include the doctor. What? Whatever the fee was included, the doctor's bill and the food and everything else. So it'd be interesting to get that out so you can take a look at that and see that.
Well, anything of that nature that you'd have that we could possibly sell, well, that's, you'd put in our file, we'd be very happy.
Well, that's what I would like to do, is to go over some of these we have and see what you want and have them photocopied. I do would like to have them returned at the present.
Oh, yes.
But
we can photocopy them at the university.
Yes, right.
And,
Well, we have.
I have to go through these. I haven't said it.
The one thing that we haven't done, and we should do, and we're resolved to do it, is to catalog these things and fix them properly.
Yes.
And we haven't. We've been so busy, we intended to do that a long time ago, but we've been on this retirement. We've been so busy, we haven't had time to do it. There's a girl, he's the one downtown. Yeah, right. Right.
Well, Barry has been so generous and given us so many materials that he has.
Yes.
And the latest thing he gave us was his scrapbook from the year he was president of the Junior Chamber.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So we've gone a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
We are collecting things at the university for a long time.
Right. Well, what I'd like to do, I'd like to turn this over at some time. I like, for the present, I'd like to keep it, but I'd like to develop these for you.
Yes.
And turn them over. Now, you see, this one here is complete. It has many things of great interest here as far as I'm concerned.
Now, we're looking at your scrapbook.
Now, this is the at this point, the chamber was powerful.
Uh-huh.
I mean, politically, socially, every way that you would say. And we had complete support of the Press Telegram during this period of time. When Frisk was there, anything we wanted was okay, with the exception of a couple of things that he wouldn't permit to have printed. The health committee couldn't have all the, they couldn't use the word syphilis if he knew he wouldn't print that in the paper at all. So you had to be very careful of the speeches that you were recording, so that otherwise Frisk would never print it. But then when came along and the Press Telegram changed over to the mighty, greater organization. He supported us completely financially. He's turned his home over to us for meetings, and we have committees come down from the state. We're going up there where all this would be taken care of. When we were, the chamber would have the full facilities of the city hall to get to anything in Sacramento, and it was a very, very pleasant way to do, because we had, if you can see through here, the publicity that we got. Now, this is, of course, on subsidency.
Yes, so you were present at the time that...
that's Darien. Darien. See, this is really this vote or no. And these are the things, and this is the first time when you find that there are people put out a blast against the Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm. Hey? So you're reproducing a letter to the Chamber from the Stripper Well Association.
Yeah, right. This is from the Stripper Well Association.
What were they arguing?
Well, they were not in favor of, at this time, it had not been thought that subsidence could be corrected and even stopped.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden they discovered that they could put water down and have secondary recovery, and it was worthwhile financially to do so. And that changed the picture at that point.
Yeah.
So everybody became pretty fit. The Sawdust Trail were holier than thou, that they were going to do all of this to help subsidence. Well, this came along all right, and as probably Derry has told you, we're not worried about today, tomorrow, within the foreseeable future, but one of these days when this thing goes dry, and we've got all these holes here, and we've got questions of subsidence then, but it is not the political situation to make statements on that today.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to make these statements because what can happen to downtown Long Beach?
Mm-hmm.
But our thought is this, that more money should become available. I think Derry has probably hammered that home to take care of anything that might happen to property here because of subsidence, but when that time comes about. But you can see here, this, the activity that we had
Would you say that was the major thing you were doing that year you were present, or was that the biggest?
We were into everything from traffic to parking and this whole thing. And you can see that we heard very few of the services that we didn't get involved in town here. And if it hadn't been for that sudden situation that we had in Pine Avenue, we would not have gone into the Daltons like it did.
Oh, I see.
That's right. And that's when the change came downtown.
Well, I interviewed Jim Edmonds, who is a mortgage banker, and he was saying that as soon as the reports came about subsidence and sinking, all the major lending agencies would stop loaning money.
That's right.
And real estate.
And they would also the insurance companies would stop.
I see.
Nobody wanted to insure.
Yeah.
So, what is it? You'd probably have to. Now, this, on the side issue, this is this. Well, we were involved. This is when the DC-9, you see.
Oh.
We opened up like that. You see, the chamber, we were there representing the city of Long Beach, you see, for this whole deal.
I see, yeah.
There's Paul. I'm up there on that. Yeah, here's where we. I was on the governor's committee that my committee handled the millions of dollars of the Hilburton funds for allocations to hospitals. And Hilburton would give, Washington would give one-third, and the state of California would give one-third, and then the local area would raise one-third. So at that time is when we had this influx of building these hospitals throughout the state with those. When community hospital needed to build a Hatfield unit, then they made application to this board. And of course, being on that board, of course, you had the whole state, everybody coming in asking for monies to build. And then we had the Department of Public Health that did the screening of these things. And then we'd work out. And it was started out first on with the computers to define this. Well, so it came down in which the board would decide. We'd have 18 to 20 million dollars to come into California. We could buy a lot more with it in those days than we can today. And then we would allocate funds to the various parts of California on their need. So this is when the community got the money to build a Hatfield unit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is at the dedication of the groundbreaking of the thing. And here's the mayor of Vermilion and so forth all the way through here.
What governor appointed you to that board? Or?
I think it was Giddy Knight was the first one, yeah. Okay, sure. Brown didn't appoint me.
Okay.
Brown appointed the... Jack was in the Savings and Loan Association, and he embezzled some funds.
Oh, my.
And I wrote a note to him and said, I'm so sorry about it, but I'm on your appointment, but the man will replace me. I'm sorry that you made that appointment. He didn't answer. He wasn't able. He didn't answer the letter.
Is that Brown Jr.?
That's Senior.
Senior.
Yeah. And then, So this is where the monies came, I guess, for that through there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Bybee. Bybee was with the, John was with the Douglas, as you know, at that time.
Yeah.
But these are things that happened after the book came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we added those to it. It was a very interesting time there in Long Beach.
Anyway, I recall when I first came, It was completely physical. To consider the nurse here in the hospital and to see every specialist and all your lab work was quite ideal. And we used to, my first job was to order a bouquet of flowers for each patient or to the lab.
The newspaper was always delivered to them too.
Right. And
the dietitians would make good call and prepare those foods for the patients if they had their choice. Of course, it was along with the diet that they had.